There are various ways of running Kafka across multiple regions, and various reasons why it's hard to do. I got Mitch Henderson and Anna McDonald back on the show, this time together, to tell us about Confluent Platform multi-region clusters and how it solves those problems. We dig into a lot of Kafka goodness, too, on this episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am your host, Tim Berglund, and I am, I think, particularly delighted today to be joined in the virtual studio by two guests, Anna McDonald and Mitch Henderson. Anna, Mitch, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you very much, Tim. Hello.
Yeah, I just realized I said welcome you both to the show at the same time. There's a media access control problem that I introduced there, right? You had to contend for access to the shared medium, and you both kind of did this delay thing. I think that's a good lesson already.
It means we're polite, right?
We are.
It means you're more polite than Ethernet, right? Ethernet would be like, bah, go. And if there's a collision, you'd back off and, you know, all that kind of thing.
I would say we're like IPX, XPX. Collision avoidance.
I like that.
There you go. Yeah, you want to try to avoid the collision rather than just be like, hey, this medium's mine. Oh, wait, it's not. Oh, wait for some time.
I'm just surprised I was allowed back on. So I think maybe I'm just a little awestruck.
You're definitely allowed back on this show.
How could you not be awestruck by Tim? I'm always awestruck by Tim.
True story. Hashtag yes.
You guys stop. Anyway, so definitely we will have a link in the show notes to Anna's previous appearance, which was at the very beginning of her employment at Confluent. And it was a Halloween-themed episode, and it was frankly amazing. And Anna, you were the creative impetus behind that episode. I think you need full credit for that. I hope you got that in the original show, but that's just how it is. But what we're going to talk about today is a feature of Confluent Platform called multi-region clusters, affectionately known as MRC. And I always like to put that up front, not so that you can stop listening because, well, they're talking about some lame commercial thing and it's just going to be a big advertisement, because that's not really how we do it here. But we are talking about a straight up proprietary feature, right? This is a thing that you can get if you buy Confluent Platform for money. But it is very interesting. And in dissecting it, which you two are quite capable of doing, you learn about just the way Kafka functions across regions and across data centers. I'll just say data centers for short. There really is a lot of cool stuff to dig into here. So I think you're going to find the conversation interesting. If you are a person who is offended by the fact that there are commercial products, you should still listen, because these two are fun and they're smart and they're going to talk about great things.
Yeah. Even though this is a commercial feature, it is built upon kind of the idea of a stretch cluster, which is a bit of open source.
Yeah, exactly. Which we're gonna talk about what those are. But first, we need to know a little bit more about you two. Anna and Mitch, you are both technical account managers at Confluent. What does a TAM do?
We have a new name now. Should we say that?
You know, okay. Yeah, right. There are new acronyms. Go ahead and drop that.
It's called Siesta, which is the only reason why I really like it, because it makes me laugh. No, I'm gonna mess it up. It's a customer success technical architect. Is that right, Mitchell?
That is correct.
Yes. What? Yeah. I get a cookie.
Okay, you're customer success technical architects. That's pretty cool. What do you do?
So if you listen to the podcast I did, we actually talked about this one.
That's right. You talked about all about being a TAM.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. Worst host ever, Mitch. I forgot that. But we're also going to link to that episode.
Was it a forgettable episode?
No, sorry. It wasn't. Mitch was in it.
Hashtag burn.
A little bit.
Yeah, but remind, Mitch, quick summary. What does quick a customer summary. Success technical architect do?
Yeah, like Anna pointed out, the name Siesta is really cool, right? Instead of saying we keep you from like messing up, now we can say we let you take a nap, or we let you take a siesta. So our job is to work with a, a wide variety of customers of Confluent and make sure that they're successful in all parts of the product, whether it's the operations part, the application development part, just, you know, not being woke up at 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. because something happened.
I mean, or 3 p.m.
because you're taking
yeah, or 3
p.m. That's right. Yeah. You're a napper.
I am a napper.
Right.
That's right.
I am also a napper, and there's no shame in that. Okay. So that's good. You help people who are, you know, they have serious deployments, businesses relying on them. They can't go down. And they may not have all the expertise to keep everything running perfectly all the time. Reach out to you guys, and you do. So you are people who are good at managing stressful situations and high stakes situations and staying chill.
I would like to just say, since the last time I was on the show, my favorite thing about being a Siesta is getting to see all the streaming use cases. Cause we also help people before that with, like, you know, application design, event streaming, how to, like, you know, come into the new, beautiful, wonderful era that is, you know, as close to real time as possible, just to be accurate, and event streaming. So it's been super fun to see the way that people are using Kafka, you know, since my time here now.
Yeah. That's a thing, by the way, that I enjoy hugely. It's happened a lot less in the pandemic, but when I get to go and meet with customers in person, you know, usually the group of architects, and like, I don't know what their use case is going to be. It's here's this new thing, and is it a slam dunk and it perfectly adapts itself to event streaming in all ways? And it's very obvious. Usually not, right? There's interesting edges that people's businesses, they didn't design their business to adapt to event streaming. And so you have to do that adaptation. And I also love doing that. That's just a really, really fun thing. It feels risky. You know, when you begin the discussion, you're struggling to understand what their use case is and wondering, wow, do I even have answers for this person? But you know, you come up with them.
That is one of my favorite things, seeing or helping someone, you know, integrate to an existing system and make it real time so that it's not, hey, I'll get an update 24 hours later, but how do I integrate with this old mainframe right. thing and make it so it is real time? And then improve the processes around that so that all of the, you know, the streaming eventing and all the fun things that Kafka brings get done.
I also like it when we get hoodies. I've gotten some free hoodies.
Hoodies are not a bad thing. I'm excited about that. I'm so short on hoodies. Yeah, no, I'm actually not short on hoodies.
There's hoodies, t-shirts, bobbleheads, whatever you got.
Bobbleheads for sure. Ball caps, stickers. Yes. Hoodies. I actually cleaned my office recently. I'll be donating some hoodies to a charity, and I've got like a reserve supply of them here. Anyway, tell us about, and you know what, since I'll call out a person to answer each question, and if you don't like that, just pass the ball to the other person. But that way you don't have to go through the media access protocol every time I ask a question. I'll try and balance them myself. But Anna, what is MRC? What is a multi-region cluster? And if I could just stack the questions up, I think Mitch, you mentioned stretch clusters. Also tell us what a stretch cluster is and tell us how they're different.
So there's a couple components, like a stretch cluster, right? As the name might imply, is a cluster that's stretched over two of something. This can be two AZs, they can be two DCs, they can be two things that give you a semblance of resiliency. As opposed to running two separate clusters and having some sort of replication between them. Those are kind of like the two big patterns in DR. And MRC at its core is a stretch cluster that has some pretty interesting additions on there that kind of help you to, at an operations level, ease the burden of deciding how do I have to map out my partitions, my, you know, replicas, all of these things in order to ensure resiliency. And Mitch, like right from the gate, has done a ton of work with this. So I'm going to kick that over to Mitch to describe exactly how that helps you.
Yeah, thanks. So as Anna was talking about, you know, this is kind of a superset of the traditional stretch cluster. If you've been around the Kafka community for a while, you've heard of stretch clusters where we, you know, put five brokers in one DC, five brokers in another DC, and stretch the Zookeeper ensemble across them. And then there's synchronous replication.
So wait, that means there's some nodes of the Zookeeper ensemble in the first AZ availability zone and some in the other?
Correct. So the way that Zookeeper works and the way that kind of what defines a stretch cluster is that it's one Kafka cluster with really inconvenient physical locations.
Right.
I don't know. I think
and
I
therefore
think
latency is going to be there.
That seems a rather correct. Negative attitude.
Well,
and I don't know that we need that kind of negativity, Anna.
I feel like I don't. But, you know what?
But walk here on. It is.
Maybe they're just slightly inconvenient physical locations.
And actually, if I may press you, Mr. Henderson, what goes wrong? I can imagine, there's latency there, but is the problem in the brokers? Is the problem in the clients? Is the problem in Zookeeper? What's so bad about a stretch cluster?
Yeah, so the bad part about a stretch cluster is that WAN in the middle. You know, if you've studied distributed systems for any amount of time, network links are generally the weak point. And anybody that's ever worked with a WAN link knows that they're bandwidth constrained, they're high latency, and they're kind of prone to failure a little bit, right? You can buttress them up with, MPLS and all kinds of dual links and all these things, but in the end of the day, that tends to be less reliable than your local data center LAN. On the operation side for Kafka, what this really means is that it's a little bit harder to manage, right? With Kafka, you have to decide where those replicas are placed, how many partitions are in each data center, how many replicas are in each data center, where my clients are connecting to for leaders, because that's primarily where we write to, or that's the only place we write to. And then some of the other things to consider are where my consumers are located. And those have always been some of the challenges with a stretch cluster.
Because you things likely don't want... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's things you can do that ease that burden, right? Like fetch from follower. So there's been, work done to make that, the penalty you pay for consuming... Right. Way, way far away, a little bit easier. But it does require additional configuration, which, as we know, it's great when things just work out of the box. So complexity, right. I think, is there, even if you can ease, some of the burdens, it's increased complexity.
Correct.
Right. And fetch, let's just take these things one at a time. I want to make sure whatever downsides, I guess I want to lean into Mitch's negativity. Whatever downsides there are of stretch clusters, I want to make sure they're on the table. So a few things. We've got, Mitch, you mentioned replica placement and I guess leader placement is the thing there. So my cluster exists over two data centers, and clients are, and I'm just going to say data center instead of AZ, just to generalize it, because it could be on-prem and they could be my data centers. They're certainly data centers, whatever they're, whether they're managed by me or not.
Mm-hmm.
There are two locations. My cluster is stretched across those two locations, and Zookeeper is managing life okay. But my clients, we're going to assume, are also in those two data centers. Now, before I go on, is that fair? That's okay, right? That they're probably in one of those two data centers.
That is an accurate statement.
Okay. And each client is probably going to want to talk to a partition leader in its nearby data center, because if it stinks to replicate across that WAN link, and even if the WAN link never fails, it is at least high latency, right? So let's pretend it doesn't even fail for our scenario. It just has latency characteristics we don't like. Application performance is probably going to be a real problem if I am going over the WAN to talk to a replica leader. Is that basically that problem with, you said you have to administer this where the where replicas are placed, and that's kind of the issue, right?
Absolutely correct. Okay. It gets a little bit more nuanced, and I think we're going to talk about that here in a second, especially when you start talking about producers versus consumers.
Got it. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Consumers, there's Anna, mentioned.
Yeah. Right. There's consumers. Right. There. You have options. Producers. You got nothing. You have to produce to the leader.
Right. And consumers, you having had an option, that feature is less than 6 months old, right? That's, I don't remember the KIP number, but I think it was AK 2.4?
Correct.
Yeah, let's go 2.4.
2.4, yeah. KIP 392.
6 months ago. That's so long. My goodness.
I know, right? How can I remember?
It is relatively new.
For 6 months. It feels like a long time ago to me.
It does.
Yeah.
Welcome to quarantine.
No pandemic that we knew of then.
Every day is
so,
a new
year. Yeah, all right. So that... Exactly. With that KIP in place, and I mentioned we can get into that more, Anna, we can get more into that in a minute. That gives us options for consumers, but producers have to produce to the leader, and it's a bummer to do that across the WAN. What else goes wrong? Is there any gotchas, like in terms of replication? Does that just kind of work and you know, writing with axe equals all is a little slower? What's the deal there?
So can I erase some of my earlier negativity?
You sure can.
So this is one of the big benefits of MRC. It uses Kafka's internal replication protocol. It doesn't require a connect node or a mirror maker or anything like that. It just uses Kafka. So the replication protocol we know and love, and we know is battle tested and works, and we know the characteristics of it and how it's going to behave, that we inherit that. So whenever I'm replicating from DC1 to DC2, I can absolutely know about how that replication's going to happen and what settings affect how quickly that replication happens.
Got it. Now, we're still talking about stretch clusters. Can you elaborate, Anna, on reading from followers, consuming from followers? What's the deal with the KIP? So his number Mitch gave, which I already forget in the course of this conversation, but just drop it on us.
So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it. So as long as you have, you know, Kafka, when you have a partition, it has leaders and it has followers. And there's a list that says, okay, here's all my followers that are in sync, right? Which means across the board, the offset, the latest one that's available to use, it's the same high watermark. We love it. We know it. It's fantastic. And so there's not any problem in terms of consistency with a consumer that consumes from an in-sync replica, right? It's no different than consuming from the leader. It also, you know, side benefit a little bit, maybe, you know, spreads the load on whatever node is currently the leader for that partition a little bit. And so it makes sense. So if you've got two DCs, one in California, let's say it's covered in avocado, not a fan. The other one's in New York, fantastic pizza and Italian food. Not that I'm, you know, in any way biased. And
my
you're
in buffalo wing sauce.
That's Western New York, my home and love of my life. So yeah, that would be even more tasty. But I digress because I'm hungry. So if you're in New York, you really don't, and the leader for the partition you're trying to consume is in California, you want none of that avocado. It's not tasty. It's far away. And they put it on everything. You want to consume from New York, which has, you know, good food and straightforward people. So what you end up doing is you say, okay, I'm going to place my replicas such that I know there's availability in the New York DC for these consumers to fetch from a follower. And that way they don't have to go over to California and lose 5 pounds, right? They can stay in New York. They can consume from an in-sync replica. And it kind of solves a lot of those issues on the consumption side with latency. Does that make sense and make people hungry?
Yes, it does. You want to consume from nodes closest to you,
basically. Yeah, and there's one other side benefit there. And that is the cost of WAN bandwidth is incredibly expensive.
Ah, yes.
The less data I have to pull over that WAN, the better I'm going to be off when it comes time to pay the bill.
Yep. This is the hidden, you know, where they get you in cloud pricing is egress costs, right? If traffic has to leave their network, it's going to hurt you.
Absolutely.
Now that I think we kind of know what a stretch cluster is and... Anna, you explained why reading from followers is a good idea. You know, you want to read from the broker that's as close to you as possible. That's not over the WAN connection. And the ability to lead from a follower means that the partition leader can be in the other data center and you can read from a follower that's in your data center and love life in terms of latency. You're not going to pay that latency penalty. Also, I didn't even think of that, but you'll save on egress costs. You won't be traversing the WAN link. Mitch. So good point. Now, how is MRC different? And I will let this be a jump ball for the two of you. Now that we kind of know what a stretch cluster is, what's MRC?
I'll go first. And I'm sorry to be rude. I just thought we'd go operations first and kind of the initial install and setup of a topic. So what MRC really does is it provides an easy way to set up a Kafka cluster so that it takes advantage of all the things in stretch cluster and makes it operationally easy, right? Those things that we talked about, like replica placement, fetch from follower, just the whole kind of install configuration, get me going and get me writing an app. All that's taken care of for you in a much easier, much more clearly defined way with MRC.
Got it. Is the benefit primarily operational?
No. Well, no. Yes and no.
Okay. There's a significant operational benefit.
I'm just biased.
I think the core MRC features, like what makes MRC, are aimed pretty much at the operations folks and making their lives easier. But making their lives easier means that we also make the application developers' lives much, much easier. So it's a win-win-win.
Right. So what does MRC do to place those replicas? Can you kind of walk me through that? Just in terms of describing the operational magic that it's doing that I don't have to think about? I'd like to at least be able to admire it once.
So my personal favorite feature of MRC is default replica placement. What this does is it allows the applications to just, instead of saying, I need three replicas and letting the brokers kind of just take over rack awareness and letting that do what it does and getting maybe not the optimal and probably not the optimal replica placement, it allows that responsibility of the application folks to just say, I don't know what to do. The brokers already probably know what to do. Let them decide. So you can say on the brokers, put two replicas in DC1, two replicas in DC2, and that's all taken care of you. So you get the optimal HA strategy for your replica placement.
And that's that would be topic level metadata where you put that configuration?
No, it's actually defined. You can define it both at the topic and you can define it as a default replica placement. So all topics coming in.
Okay. Yeah, that's money.
For any new topic.
Exactly.
That's my favorite thing too.
So for the teams out there with a multi-tenant cluster, they don't have to go to each application team as they onboard and say, what are you trying to do? Where do you need your replicas? Here's why your replicas.
Let me explain this thing called MRC to you. It's really cool. No, wait, why won't you listen? Right. You don't want to have to do that.
Correct. You just set this on the broker and, you tell your app teams to, instead of saying, I want one replica or three replicas, you just tell them to set it as -1 replicas and the broker defaults take over.
Yes. And so that's also just for listeners at home. The reason you can do that is because of KIP 464, which is a beautiful thing. Last modified by Matthias J. Sachs. Shout out. What up? And the cool thing is now you're able to pass in -1 to the admin client, which allows you to just leave it up to the broker. That's something that works in Kafka Streams. So for people out there, who are used to having to go in and define internal topics in Kafka Streams, you can just say -1 and your replicas will be placed across a stretch cluster exactly as the broker defaults are, which is huge. Because anyone who is a Kafka Streams aficionado, obviously you love it. Internal topics get created and there can be lots of them. And having to kind of like either open a ticket every time or try to rely on a less than optimal placement, then, move them after, that's just really hard and not workable and not fun. And so this is amazing because it just basically allows, as whatever your operation team determines is the best placement, as an application developer, you can go, okay, and just put -1 and roll with it. So I love
it. Got it.
It's also important to point out, it's not just Kafka Streams. It's part of the admin client now.
would we say it's important? And I did say admin client.
Yes, you did.
I gave the KIP number. It's a palindrome.
So that we can also thank Randall for getting it into Connect, as well as, you know, the rest of the clients.
Can we? Hi, Randall. I'll give him a shout out too.
Yeah. We can. All right. But anything that's going to create topics and like you said, Kafka Streams most certainly going to create topics, then you get that auto replica placement strategy. And that's not making any commitment to where the leader is, right? The leader election happens, and is leader election influenced by MRC? I guess I should ask. But merely saying I want this sort of placement doesn't say where leaders go, right?
Preferred leader election still takes precedence. Mm-hmm. So you can still say, as part of this, I prefer all of my leaders to be in this data center.
Excellent.
Which, okay, that is something that the application developers have to think about a little bit, at least where they deploy their apps.
But yeah, and I would think, you know, there's a couple of patterns you see. Sometimes there's a pattern where you have application teams deployed on, you know, easiest way to talk about it is like coast to coast, right? Because then it really does matter in terms of like latency. So there's some places that say, okay, yeah, we want to back up on the other coast, but we don't really have any, you know, consumers or producers or applications deployed there. We just want to back it up. So in that case, they'll centralize all their leaders right in one DC. So there's
a very obvious preferred leader.
Exactly. There. But then there's other places where they're like, well, this, you know, this business case or use case, these applications, right, they're running over here on the West Coast. Well, this one's running in the East Coast, right? So, and you have the flexibility to create, you know, different strategies if you need to, right? Just because you can use default replica placement doesn't mean you have to if you're better served using a custom one.
Got it.
So yeah, for some, yeah, you know, yeah, what I mean? Some topics you could say, I want the leader over here. Others you maybe want it over here, depending on where your apps are running.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons we made this default replica placement overridable by the clients. So the clients can still override this as they deploy their apps. But if they don't know, go with the default.
As you should. All right. You and Anna, you were just starting to get into this, but I'll ask you, and again, you guys can throw the question back and forth as you like. What are the cases that you see where this really, or the value of this thing is most obvious? And I just want to say, I feel like that's a little bit of a dorky question because it seems self-evident to me that you'd want disaster recovery. So I'm trying to word it specifically, like, who really cares about this? Like,
I don't think that's silly at all because it's expensive. And if you don't need it, like, basically it comes down to two concepts, right? What's your recovery time objective and what's your recovery point objective? And I do this in my Kafka Summit talk. I'm going to do it again because I just thought of the best analogy for it ever. So let's say like you're at home and you're watching a live stream that's like a reunion of the Murder, She Wrote cast, right? Which would be the coolest thing ever. I know there won't be many
random example
now
of a TV show with no particular attachment.
Well,
to
no,
you,
it's a live stream, like right? Yeah, I just picked it out of the air. I don't, got no special affinity there. Yeah. So basically you have to ask yourself, if the power goes out, how long can you stand it going out, right? 10 minutes, an hour, not at all. If not at all, right, you need a backup generator to take over. So that's like your, you know, recovery time objective. How long can you afford to be down? And then your recovery point objective is how much of this live stream can I afford to miss? Like 10 minutes, you know, 20, none? Do I have to pick up right where I left off? And many times for many use cases, those trend towards zero, right? And in that case, if you looked at having two separate clusters, right, you're going to have to, you know, manually fail over applications. So it's going to take time, right? And in a case where your RTO, RPO are really close to zero, that drives people, I find, the most to stretch clusters because you can get that with stretch clusters because to clients, it's just one big cluster. So as long as you're configured
RTO,
properly,
RPO you have, recovery time objective, recovery point objective.
Correct. Yep.
Just
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So go on. Sorry.
And so, you know, those should really drive your requirements. Without knowing those, you really shouldn't make any decision whatsoever about your DR strategy. Because that's really, if you don't need those to be zero, then you have other options, you can explore it. And I always like that because if you think about it, right, there are times where you have a batch job and it fails and you don't care. Like, you'll restart it the next night. So I think in our industry, sometimes we pretend that there's like no cases where it's okay for something to fail. And that's clearly false. There are many cases. So, you know, always it's a good thing to start with. What, you know, what are your requirements?
Okay.
Yeah. I don't.
And if they're zero, then, you know, you're going
to close to zero
money making that happen. Yeah. Of course. Close.
Let's to be zero. Mathematically accurate. The limit as it approaches zero. How about that?
Whenever I'm out talking to folks about this one, I don't even call it DR at this point. It's just highly available, right? Your electric, again, it was talking about there, is highly available, right? If a substation goes down, it gets rerouted to a different substation.
And I think, Mitch, contra your negativity early in the interview, that's a much more positive way to frame it. You know, it's not that there's a disaster. It's just you want it to be available. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Anna, you said client failover, and I want to drill down into that. It's, again, potentially an obvious thing, but let's walk through something. So I'm a client. I don't care whether I'm a producer or a consumer. I have a connection pool. And as leader election proceeds, due to whatever mechanisms might drive leader election, I will get metadata updates from the cluster about where leaders are, right? Good so far?
Yep.
And I have, you know, good old fashioned socket connections to between the client and the broker. Those are pooled internally inside the client library. There's all this stuff going on inside the client, right? The API surface is so small, but there's a great deal of plumbing happening there, but there's this connection pool. The bummer is when there is a metadata change, but I don't know, right? When a broker actually fails, I had a connection to the old broker and I'm trying to, say, produce a record to that broker. And there's going to be, I suppose, a TCP timeout followed by some sort of exception that gets thrown and bad things happen. And there's some period of many seconds over which that takes place. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So when that happens, you can think about it this way too, right? One of the wonderful things about Kafka is you can take down a node for maintenance, and if you're configured with any semblance of, you know, propriety, you will not take down your apps. And so it's kind of a similar example, like you said. And as long as you configure your clients to be resilient in the face of retriable errors, of which that is one, they'll try again until they do have a good leader elected, right? So I think what you're digging into is incredibly important, which is it's the two coins of resiliency. You have to have resiliency in your infrastructure and you have to have resiliency in your clients.
Got it. And where this really comes into play is that the clients are single cluster only. So if you're not stretched or—
Hashtag one cluster, sorry.
Yes.
Hashtag one cluster, use it, love it.
And that's where this architecture really, really shines. Because it is just one cluster, all the things that those clients do, all that plumbing you're talking about, we just inherit that and it's all good.
Of course. Okay. No, that makes sense. And that's, we wouldn't want clients to have to change because that's, you know, fairly proven stuff. And, you know, there's already a, you know, various streams of work in Apache Kafka where those things get improved over time. And we kind of want to rely on the existing mechanism there. All right. So I need to back up a little bit. I keep drilling down into things because I think they're interesting questions and I'm losing track of where I am. We were talking about when you need it, Anna, and you said when PRO, which is point.
RPO.
Give me these again. RPO.
Yep. Recovery point objection. How much of your live stream can you afford to miss?
Right. And how long can it take you to fail over? And when those are small, obviously you don't get to specify zero because that's not realistic because things fail and, you know, sockets take time to time out and all that kind of stuff. But when those are small, then you want MRC. And in general, that's the thing that you find drives people to want this feature.
Yep.
Okay. So we've kind of been digging into the client side, but I want to go there a little bit more and get a sense of what's difficult without MRC about managing failovers. Like, are there ever offset problems I have to deal with? It's not clear immediately to me that there would be, but do I have to keep track of offsets when I manage a failover? And what else in my life as a developer using this gets better?
I can be negative. It's super fun. Watch me. So,
all right,
yeah, if you don't have hashtag one cluster, you have two separate clusters, you have a lot of problems. Because you have to remember, currently, if you use, you know, no matter if you use Replicator or something like Mirror Maker, it doesn't matter. You don't have offset parity. You have two separate clusters. Offsets don't match. Even if you, you know, use something like Replicator has offset translation, you have to deal with the fact that this is async replication, which means there potentially could be a lag, which means that I'm a producer. I have to know that all of my data might not have made it over there before the data center died. So I have to make sure I can reproduce any data that didn't make it over. As a consumer, I have to know where I left off. And not only that, I have to know how to map where I left off to the other cluster because the offsets aren't the same. When it fails, I've got to go bring everything down, you know, update my bootstrap list, move over. There's just a lot of requirements in order to reach a low. Like, and again, right, this is driven by your RTO and RPO. If your recovery point objective is zero, means you can't lose any data, then the requirements I just, you know, said, you have to do, they have to be able to reproduce any data that didn't make it, right? And you have to know where you left off to make sure that you're not getting a ton of dupes, because most people do not like that.
And one of the things I talk to a lot of folks about is deciding when to fail over. Like, do if I have two clusters and they're asynchronously being replicated with Mirror Maker Replicator, do I fail over when one broker goes down, when one leader goes offline? What's my criteria for this? It's much easier to hand this off to the existing clients and just use their logic because it's tested and works.
Sure. It's what they do. Okay. That makes sense. So the client experience is you've got retries enabled, which let's assume that you do in this sort of scenario where you'd want something like MRC. You're fine. Retries do their thing and you're going to experience significantly longer latency on that read or write as the failover is happening, but that's what happens. And it should be invisible to the developer. There's no fussing with offsets. There's no special thing you have to do catching an exception or anything like that. Am I oversimplifying?
Well, it gets a little worse. I just want to make sure I draw this horrible picture accurately, because sure. It gets even worse when you talk about, yeah, it's not as bad as quarantine, but it's getting there now. It's with Kafka Streams in particular. Think about it like, you know, Kafka Streams, it's a flow, right? It all works together. And so the internal topics that are holding state, right? Those are replicated asynchronously. So you don't even have any semblance of assured consistent state. So you can't really, in an active passive setup, you can't even replicate internal topics for Kafka Streams because there's no assurance you'd get the right state. You could have, you know, things that were further.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hot mess. And yeah. So the burden on the client for Kafka Streams and for upper level APIs becomes even worse, to the point where it's really like, you need to run a stretch. You really do. Otherwise, it's going to be very unwieldy if you have those resiliency requirements.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's
for more information and gory details. See my Kafka Summit talk.
Thank you for that. And okay, I'm not quite sure. I don't think. Let me put this positively. I think by the time this airs, there will be a link to that available online. I'm pretty sure this episode is going to go live after Kafka Summit. And if I'm wrong, then, hey, you're lucky. And pretty soon after you listen to this, you'll be able to listen to Anna's Kafka Summit talk. What else comes up? I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of how this works and what the experience is like operationally and as a client developer. What are other kind of common topics that come up in the MRC world?
Yeah, so the other topic that almost always comes up is I've got, you know, maybe I don't want to have a fully synchronous replica someplace and pay that produce latency cost. So one of the other features of MRC is the concept of an observer node. It's not a leader. It's not a follower. It's an observer node. And what that is it's an async replica. But it uses the same Kafka protocol that everything replicates with. The you know, and we actually have kind of a pattern that Addison Hudley, the PM for Core Kafka at Confluent here, kind of coined the term for, and it's called COZO, Kafka Observer, Zookeeper Observer. And what this allows us to do is not only have, you know, two data centers, or for example, have two data centers with, you know, synchronous replication without synchronous without the A, but we can also have a third data center sitting out there that's asynchronous, or multiple of these data centers for, say, point-to-presence data distribution without paying all the write penalties.
Of course. Okay. When you say asynchronous replica, what that means is it's a replica like any other in terms of the way it's got, you know, it's going out and scraping writes off its leader, but there isn't any producer that will wait for replication to happen to that node.
Exactly.
Right.
It's the same concept of how we traditionally do DR, right? We would produce the message into one cluster and it would eventually get out to the other cluster.
What does COZO stand for again?
Kafka Observer, Zookeeper Observer.
That's right. It's also a plant.
It is.
Is it? What kind of, Anna, what kind of plant is it?
It's a paper mulberry. I think the scientific name is Brasinetia paperfia. And that's totally not because I just looked it up.
Yeah. Hashtag just Googled it.
Nice. That's one point I'll give you.
And with that, my guests today have been Anna McDonald and Mitch Henderson. Anna and Mitch, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you, Tim. This was great.
Yes. Thank you, Tim.
Hey, you know what you get for listening to the end? Some free Confluent Cloud. Use the promo code 60PDCAST, that's 60PDCAST, to get an additional $60 of free Confluent Cloud usage. Be sure to activate it by December 31st, 2021, and use it within 90 days after activation. And any unused promo value on the expiration date will be forfeit, and there are a limited number of codes available, so don't miss out. Anyway, as always, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in our community Slack. There's a Slack signup link in the show notes if you'd like to join. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover us, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.